the other mantra I'll share with you that really pulls this all together, Adam, and people that have heard me present before know this through and through. Think about this. Prescription before diagnosis is malpractice. So that's the equivalency of me going into a doctor's office saying my arm hurts and the doctor says, let's cut it off. Is there a better way to handle that? Yeah, it's called diagnosis. It's called asking questions. It's called X-ray. It's called MRI, right? So a doctor is going to be sued for malpractice if he doesn't do good diagnosis. And same thing in selling legal services. We don't want to have malpractice because we're prescribing too soon. We're prescribing before we diagnose.
Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld, an entrepreneur, marketer, and seeker of high-performing habits, tips, and strategies. Each week, I'll bring to you an elite performer, a legal expert, or simply a strategy to help you see and follow the path to personal greatness in your firm and life. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Arkfeld, president and founder of Prevail Legal Marketing. And today I have Steve Fretson joining me. Steve is president of Fretson Inc. and the podcast host of Be That Lawyer. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Let's just get started by you giving us a little bit of background on how you got started working with attorneys in general. Where'd that journey start for you?
Yeah. So the easiest way to explain it is to let everyone know right off the bat, I'm not an attorney. I was pulled into the industry kicking and screaming in 2008 with the recession. And what I've been doing before that, I've been a sales guy since I was 16 selling shoes and sort of went to college just to get a degree. And then I just ended up getting back into sales. And that's what I did for the majority of my early part of my career. And in 2004, set up a shop, believe it or not, called Sales Results Inc., all about helping entrepreneurs improve sales. And this came about after working with a coach myself and getting a tremendous amount of feedback and identifications of gaps and problems and challenges that I didn't even know I had. I thought I was the bee's knees. And he was able to identify a bunch of things that I was doing very inefficiently. And I just fell in love with coaching. I fell in love with sales coaching in particular. By the way, as an aside, years ago, I took a personality like career test, and it showed the two things that I should do with my life if I could pick, if like based on my personality and my skill sets, was teaching or sales. And now I'm teaching sales. So there you go. That helps explain it. But in 2004, set up my shop, mainly helping entrepreneurs, worked in over 50 different industries. And in 2008, when the recession hit, I started getting calls from lawyers. Many of my entrepreneur clients had been talking about how wonderful the program was and the coaching experience they had with me. And I started working with a lawyer, then two, then three, then a firm, then another. And it really, within a couple of years, blew out. And I realized about 80% of my total client base was lawyers and law firms. So I just decided to push my chips in. They absolutely hated my name, Sales Results Inc. So I changed it to Fretson Inc. because essentially I am the business anyway. So that's what's gone on. And then that's what I've been doing is really helping lawyers figure out how to do what I call sales-free selling, which is not sales. It's actually teaching them how to run meetings and how to prospect and get business built without ever feeling salesy. So it really works well within the mindset of a lawyer and their interest in never really feeling like a salesperson. So it's really been a great synergistic and harmonious type of relationship I've had in the legal community now for, I don't know, 14 years or so.
That's amazing. So what does feeling salesy mean? Like what does an attorney mean when they say that?
So I think it's when you, I mean, they even have a name for it. They call it, I'm going on a pitch meeting. They're pitching business. That's what they call it in the legal industry. And that's essentially going into a meeting to share why you're smarter, better, faster, stronger than other lawyers and how you can help solve legal challenges maybe better than anybody else. And the problem with that is that many lawyers feel that whether it's networking and passing out cards or it's meeting with people and making a pitch, it's a lot about convincing. It's a lot about just trying to lock up the business, get that business brought in, which means that you're selling yourself and you're selling your firm. And that just for a lot of attorneys doesn't feel great. It feels like you're not at your best self. And so the concept of sales-free selling, which I've been teaching now for around 20 years, is all about the idea that you could go out, build relationships, build trust, ask great questions, be a consultant, and identify needs. And then after you've done all that and qualified that someone's a good fit, then you might be in a position to, you know, help solve problems or help, you know, present solutions. But it's really more walking a buyer through a buying decision to see if there's a fit versus trying to convince or pitch someone to do work with you.
So can you maybe, I love what you're saying. It makes sense. But what I'd be curious about is, can you like give two examples, like almost like, I don't want to say like role play, but I mean, like when someone's doing it wrong, quote unquote, yep. You know, they're salesy. And then when someone's kind of doing it right, because I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about myself selling, right? So what are the things that people say that turn people off and make them salesy? And then how does that compare to something that, you know, you teach and sounds better?
I mean, I can certainly give examples, but I will share with you something that I had a big aha moment on years ago. And my clients, when they hear me present this, they have the same moment of, oh my God, that is exactly what's happening. So I'll tell you about two models and how they don't work well together. And this example, I think, will cover where you want to go. So there is a seller's model, all right? And this is, we can take a lawyer. Let's say a lawyer is selling estate planning, okay? Meets with a husband and wife in a conference room or a home or whatever. And that, so now they have a prospect. They get the prospect in front of the lawyer. The lawyer pitches, look, you know, I'm here to talk about estate planning. And here's what we do to help people with estate plans. I've got a bunch of questions to ask you. And they get all that information and they present the solution of an estate plan and what an estate plan does. And they talk about the price, and the price for that is $3,500. Okay. Then the buyer is going to have objections. The seller, the lawyer in this case, will handle those objections. Well, the reason it's $3,500 is because I'm going to be doing this kind of work. And the option, the idea of the seller is to close the business, to lock up the business. Okay. So that's the seller model, to get to pitch to close before the ether wears off. All right. Now here's the interesting thing. If we take off our seller's hats, and you have a seller hat, I have a seller hat, we put on our buyer hats, right? Adam, you buy stuff, don't you? You go out and buy things, right?
You buy plenty of things. Yep.
Buy plenty of things. I mean, people have been buying for the last 2 years straight with the pandemic. And think about how we buy. Okay. So let's say I walk into a department store and I'm looking for a gift for my wife for her birthday, and a salesperson approaches me and says, sir, may I help you? And I would put up my hands, which you can't see, but I'm putting up my hands like as a wall. And I say, just looking. Now, is that true? Am I just looking? I'm not just looking. I'm there for a reason. Okay. But I don't want to be approached by a salesperson. I don't want to be sold something. I've been beat up before by salespeople. So I have a built-in mechanism to hold them at bay. And what am I really looking for as a buyer? So let's take it to the next level. Let's say you're buying an addition on your home, a kitchen, or high-level legal services. The job of the buyer is to get information and price, right? Isn't that what you search for when you're looking for a car, when you're looking to get a new kitchen? You want to get three different options. You want to get all that information and price. We are an information generation. That's what we do. And it's been going on, and the internet has been a huge build up to that. And then what we do once we get that information is we have power, the power to compare, the power to negotiate, the power to maybe not do anything, maybe the power to just say, I'll think about it, I'll get back to you. And then what do we as buyers do when we decide that we're not going to do something, or when we're going to go with someone else? We just disappear, right? So there's a seller model that's all about getting to the close. And there's a buyer model that's all about information and price, and then taking our sweet time to make decisions, because we don't want to be pushed into something. And the problem is that they're very competitive. They're very combative. The seller's there to sell, the buyer's there to buy, and they're not necessarily working in each other's best interests. Do you see where I'm going with this? Mm-hmm. So what I'm suggesting and working on with attorneys, and really this could be in any industry, is to not use the seller model of pitching anymore, and not to allow buyers to use the buying model, because it actually isn't in their best interests to just collect data and information. What they really should go for is the sales-free selling model that I teach, which is a buyer is getting walked through a buying decision, not being sold, but being asked questions to identify needs, to identify gaps, to identify where the challenges are. And then once that's been identified, then to see if there's a good fit, to see if there's a reason to collaborate. So let's take you, for example. I'm a law firm that isn't getting enough lead generation. Okay. I want, as the buyer, I want to be understood. I want to be listened to. I want to be walked through a decision to see if Adam's pay-per-click program is the right for me versus the one I did before that was a train wreck. Okay. And that's a much better model than you selling me services or you selling me pay-per-click or trying to squeeze me into, you know, a round peg through a square hole. All right. So that's really what I'm trying to explain to everybody, that the seller model doesn't work. The buyer model doesn't work. They're not really cohesive, and we need to look at a different model. And it's amazing what happens when my clients go through my program and they start being a better listener, questioner, more understanding, more empathetic. They end up not really having to sell anything at all. It ends up just being like, this is such a great fit. I feel understood. And how do we move forward? And that's really a better experience for everybody.
Yeah. So just to kind of recap that to make sure I understand, the buyer model is going through acquiring information, not really engaging, just like doing all the research, right? Yep. It's the person that comes in and says, no, I don't need help, but really they're clearly looking for something. And the seller model is someone trying to push someone into a sale, you know, just talking about themselves, you know, not really digging into the buyer. And so you're talking about sort of bridging that gap, which is asking questions to help the buyer go through their process, but not just leave them on their own where they're not, you know, it's hard to find the information on your own and make decisions based on that, right? Is that a fair kind of recap of what you're saying?
I'll just give you a quick example from my life. I was looking for a new car and test drove an Audi. My wife was pregnant at the time. This is going back a number of years. And the salesman said, see how fast you can take this on ramp. He thought that I was into speed, that I was into the performance of the car, which, by the way, if my wife wasn't there, yeah, I would have taken it a little further. My wife freaked out. She didn't like that at all. What should the salesman have been doing? The salesman should have been asking questions. The salesman should have identified that my wife's pregnant. Maybe her hot buttons were different than mine. Maybe her hot buttons were about safety for the baby. And that car would have not had to been sold. It would have been bought because he would have brought us into what matters to us and what matters to my wife, which, by the way, was more important in this case. And that never happened. Okay. So it's so much more about understanding and figuring out a way to partner to solve problems versus me trying to just guess what your problems are and just start throwing out solutions. The other mantra I'll share with you that really pulls this all together, Adam, and people that have heard me present before know this through and through. Think about this. Prescription before diagnosis is malpractice. So that's the equivalency of me going into a doctor's office saying my arm hurts and the doctor says, let's cut it off. Is there a better way to handle that? Yeah, it's called diagnosis. It's called asking questions. It's called X-ray. It's called MRI, right? So a doctor is going to be sued for malpractice if he doesn't do good diagnosis. And same thing in selling legal services. We don't want to have malpractice because we're prescribing too soon. We're prescribing before we diagnose.
That is a great parallel. That's a great parallel. Now, I've been lightly involved in sales training like Sandler, and they say, you know, get conditional closes, and it's all of that type of thing. What's your take on that type of sales training versus yours? Is it similar in some ways, or is it different? I mean, I feel salesy in the Sandler method because it's like you're always asking questions that are so uncommon. You're just trying to like take them down the path, and it feels awkward to me. But admittedly, I did not get very deep into it, but I just know a bit about it. So,
I think Sandler is very good for salespeople to unwrap the way that they've been doing it, maybe improperly. I can't speak, you know, I can tell you is that I try to pull from Sandler. I try to pull from all the top process-driven programs so that I can put something together that makes sense for lawyers, because lawyers are a unique group. They need to be treated in a different way than, you know, an insurance salesman or other types of people selling services. And obviously one thing that I've been able to do over doing this, you know, 14 years or longer, has been to craft a program specifically for lawyers that really hits the mark as far as how they want to feel and how they want to sell. And then on top of that, I have to customize some elements of it because one lawyer is an introvert, IP, intellectual property attorney, who's a scientist. And I've got someone else who's an extrovert who is running around like a chicken with its head cut off. And so I've got to be flexible in the process I teach isn't that flexible. I think it's all a series of steps that everyone follows, but the language and the way that it's approached will vary from client to client, lawyer to lawyer. And so I think that if it's something that's like I have a client I talked to this morning who was very uncomfortable with something. And it was just a matter of taking an extra couple minutes to customize the language to something that he can wrap his hands around. And I'll give you a quick example that might illustrate this. For some lawyers, asking a client for a referral, right? And we know that's the heart of how we get business, right? If you can take a happy client and get another client from that happy client, that's the easiest and lowest hanging fruit that exists. But lawyers are afraid to make the ask. Some lawyers can just say, look, you know, we've been working together a long time. You've been very happy with the work that I've done. And I know there's other people that I could help the way I've helped you. Can we talk about a few of those? And that's making the ask. But someone that is comfortable with that is going to handle it very similarly. However, what if you're an introvert? What if you're very uncomfortable with what I just said? You're listening to this right now saying, I would never say that. That's super uncomfortable. So I've customized a variety of options and different language variants to help people that are uncomfortable. And sometimes admitting you're uncomfortable is a great way to get buy-in from the other person. So I teach something very simple, psychologically simple. It's called okay, not okay. So Adam, if I noticed on looking at you online that you seemed like you're not well, like you're sweating and you've got a fever. And I would say, Adam, are you okay? You know, is there anything I can do for you? You want me to, you know, send you some tea or something like that, right? We take care of people that are not okay. That's what good people do. So in this instance, let's say I have an introverted attorney that is very uncomfortable making an ask for an introduction to another GC, for example, general counsel. And so the language they would use is, you know, Adam, I've been meaning to ask you something, but if I'm being honest, terribly uncomfortable with what I'm about to ask you, but I'm pushing myself because I care about my business and I care about, you know, helping people. And I think, you know a lot of people that other general counsels that you've worked with that I might be a great fit for. You've told me on a number of occasions how good I am. But again, I don't want to overstep any boundaries with our relationship, Adam. But is that something you'd be open to talking about? What the heck are you going to say to me? No, I'm not interested in that. You're going to come to my rescue because you like me and because you know I'm good and because my not okayness needs to be met with you helping to make me okay. So if there's some psychology there, it's very simple. I'm no therapist, although I play one on TV working with lawyers, but that's a simple fix for lawyers that, and then of course the lawyers that use that language, they try it out once or twice and they come back to me and they go, oh my God, you would not believe how many referrals I just got from my general counsel client. The guy wants to introduce me to 10 people. I don't even have the capacity for that. It's all because the language needed to be adapted to that individual.
Yeah. And I sort of feel like the buzzword these days for that is like vulnerability, right? Like you're exposing yourself and saying, you know, I'm a human. This makes me uncomfortable. I want to grow my business. We've had a good relationship. You know, would you be willing to help? You know, and you're just like asking for help in a more vulnerable way than saying, hey, do you know someone that might be able to use my services? You're still asking for help then, but it's like less, a little bit more shielded, a little bit more.
Yeah. Guarded. And I don't think it shows weakness. It shows maybe vulnerability, but what it shows is it demonstrates that I'm being sensitive to the relationship and I'm being sensitive to who I am as a person and my comfort level with what I'm doing. However, I still need to do it. And I'm hoping you can help me. And by the way, if the person says, go screw yourself, or they say not interested or whatever, then you never should have made the ask in the first place because you didn't really have the relationship that you thought. It was either transactional or they really don't like you, right? And in that case, you're not aware, an aware individual at all. So this would be for your A or B clients that really have told you on a number of occasions how terrific you are and they like you and the relationship is a you know star high star rating. And then again, common sense.
Well, I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, if you're uncomfortable asking someone for a referral, it could either be because you're uncomfortable with the process or because you're not certain about the relationship and you're not exactly sure if they want to give you a referral.
Yeah.
So it's important to identify which of those it is, because if you get through the process, but the relationship isn't very strong, it's not going to go so well. And it's probably going to damage the relationship further because it just shows lack of awareness, like you said, and is uncomfortable.
Yeah. And again, if you don't feel that the relationship is there, well, here's a aha moment for you. Focus on that. Build a social component. Ask them how you can help their business. You know, give them referrals. Figure out, are they short on staff? And maybe you know somebody that would be a great fit for their company. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to add value. And that's what needs to happen prior to, you know, in addition to just doing great work or in addition or prior to making an ask like that where the expectation is they're going to step up.
What do you see over the last 14 years as the mindset that's the most limiting for attorneys? Because growth is almost all mindset, right? What are the mindsets that you see that locked attorneys down, and then what do they have to transition into to really start growing?
I mean, most attorneys right now are busier than they've ever been. I mean, I've even had some lawyers say, look, I'd love to do your program, but I can't even handle more business if I brought it in. And that's limiting in the sense that, is that going to be forever? Is that the way things are going to stand now for the next 5 or 10 years? You know, business development is something that is a mindset that you either have, you don't have, or you're looking to develop. And if you think that you've got enough business today, that doesn't necessarily mean the business is there tomorrow. And all the smart lawyers that know that, you know, they're not taking the same risks as someone who, even an associate at a firm, is thinking, I've got work I have to do for everybody. Where am I going to do business development? Well, you're not going to do business development because you're going to be so busy doing everyone else's work and working for everyone else's clients. You're never going to build your own. And what's the downside of that? Well, there's a lot of downsides to not having your own clients, right? How you run your day, how you run your life, how, you know, and again, things might be okay right now, but the reality is that firms are getting gobbled up at a record rate. Non-lawyer law firms are just starting out in Arizona and Utah. That's going to be a thing. And you're going to be competing against, you know, Deloitte. You're going to be competing against Google. I mean, do you think Google might give their law firm a good rating or a good, you know, good placement on Google? Who knows? So there's just a lot of elements. There could be another recession. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on right now. So I think just preparing for the future and thinking about business development as one of the key and core fundamental skills that need to be developed in addition to being a great lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I totally agree with that. So the strategies that you're seeing working in the, do you also work with attorneys on just business development in general outside of the close about how to bring in more clients? And can you talk about that a little bit if you do?
It's really like a story. Every good story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you miss one of those pieces, it's not a great story. I mean, my wife walks in when I'm watching a show and there's, you know, 10 minutes left and then she wants to know everything about what's going on. And I just want to put my head through a window. Okay. Cause I just sat through 50 minutes of this and she missed it. So the beginning of the story is attorneys need to write a plan of how they're going to go to market. They're going to social media. It could be pay-per-click. It could be, you know, their website. It could be business development, like networking, leveraging clients, cross-marketing. There's all different ways to go to market and to get business. And I always recommend going after the low-hanging fruit. Like, why are you networking and meeting strangers when you have 250 clients that you haven't been contacting, right? I mean, that there's things that might be right in front of you that you need to find. But it all starts with a planning and understanding how you should be spending your time. And I absolutely work on that. That's, you know, paramount. The second piece is, all right, now you've generated, you know, business or generated opportunities for business. Now you need sales-free selling. How are you walking those buyers through a buying decision to get to the close, to compete against, you know, if you're an IP firm and you've got someone looking to meet with you and three other firms, how are you going to win that business? Okay. How are you going to come across different and authentic and better and do it without selling? And then the third piece is, how do you implement clients, retain clients, and then stay viable in the market from a branding perspective, right? How do you stay top of mind? That could be a newsletter, that could be social media, that could be, you know, how you touch base with them on an ongoing basis and keep track of it in an organized way versus, oh, I think I need to call that client. I haven't talked to him in a year. Well, yeah, that's a year you haven't been in front of someone that you should have been in front of every month because they represent $100,000 a year in business to you or had in the past. Okay. So it really is a bunch of different elements that are important. And if it's something that I don't do, like there's somebody coming to me for something like what you do, Adam, I don't do it. Well, then I have you and I've got other people in other areas that I can refer. I don't physically put together a newsletter, but if somebody needs one, I've got 5 or 10 different resources that I could hand them to get that knocked out.
Yeah.
You know?
And on the fulfillment and process side, you know, what do you see, you know, in that realm, you know, they've done the marketing, they've gotten the leads in, they've done the sales, and, you know, operations and processes are a real challenge for businesses in general, you know, attorneys included. So where do you see the biggest opportunities for growth just internally with the business and some of the biggest mistakes that, you know, any firm makes, smaller or larger?
I mean, not really getting into operations, but to talk about it from a business development perspective, the two or three biggest mistakes or missteps that I see. And again, when I evaluate an attorney, in some cases, I have like a page of notes of things or that where I've identified gaps, things that just are, they're not doing to the degree. And they might be, have $1 million or $2 million book. I've had people with a $10 million book and I identified tons of gaps because they're missing some things that are right in front of them. It's like a pile of money sitting on a table and they're just walking around it all day. So I would say the top two are, how do you leverage past and existing clients for additional business? So that could be cross marketing. If you're at a full service firm, to be able to, all right, I'm doing their litigation, but we're not doing their M&A. We're not doing their real estate. We're not doing the other areas that surround that client because it's a mid-market international client and there's all kinds of legal needs and we're only handling one piece of it. And when in fact, I could be managing the whole kit and caboodle. Okay. So that's one piece is the cross marketing. The other is, again, lack of effort or process to identify that general counsel, CEO, that decision maker, client, who they know and walking them through who they can introduce you to so that you can get that other business without really working very hard. Right now, 25% of general counsels are ready to move at any given time. So that's a report that came out. That was a survey report done interviewing general counsels all over the world that 25% of them are saying, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to move law firms. And lawyers aren't even thinking about that. They go, they've got counsel. If they need me, they'll call. Well, that lack of proactivity is a huge misstep because we're just waiting for the phone to ring and it's not the good old days of the 80s, 90s, 2000s. You know, people just aren't picking up phones anymore. You need to be put in front of them through a trusted advisor, a trusted client in order to get a seat at the table and have that opportunity to pull that business in. It's there. So I think those are probably the top two that I see. And then just solos, for example, just not putting that plan together to identify how they should be spending their time. So they're just doing shotgun. They're doing whatever is the soup of the day, as opposed to having a targeted plan and execution that's going to really drive that traction.
Yeah. You know, if you don't have some sort of a guide on what you're doing, it's just really hard to focus your time throughout the day because you just get distracted. Every little tactic that comes your way, shiny object, you start kind of chasing for a little bit. And this is actually one of my biggest struggles is like, you know, staying true to the path that I'll create paths all the time. I'll create frameworks, but then like staying in it, it's hard. That's a hard thing to do.
There's a book by Mike Kim sitting right here on my desk called You Are the Brand. And there's a ton of great takeaways in that book. And shout out to Mike Kim. The one that really resonated with me is he made a decision like to do one thing really well. So this is the year of the podcast. This is the year of the book, the year of LinkedIn. And just spend a year focusing on one thing. Not doing 100 things, one thing really. Now that doesn't mean you can't do a couple other things on the side, but I've got a book coming out this year and into next year called Legal Business Development Isn't Rocket Science. Okay. And it's going to be my year of the book. I'm going to talk about the book. I'm going to promote the book. I'm going to share the book. I'm going to give away the book. I mean, it's going to be book, book, book. And I'm going to spend a whole year doing that and get a lot of movement just on the fact that I put a tremendous amount of time into a really robust book that covers a lot of ground for lawyers. This year, 2021, was the year of the podcast. My podcast has grown significantly, and I've invested a ton of time and energy and everything building up my audience and building up, just making sure that it's front and center, and it's been great. So that type of focus, I think, produces better results than trying to do everything around every idea that pops into your head.
Yeah, I really like that, having an annual theme. And a year is a long time, but it's also not forever, right? So you can do really big things in a year and have massive momentum in just that amount of time.
Yeah.
All right. Just one last question before we wrap up. I'm just curious to hear, what do you feel like is happening in the legal field? Or I don't want to say like what's the future of the legal field, but are you seeing transitions take place with all the attorneys you're coaching? Anything you might predict over the next couple of years or 5 years, anything like that?
Well, there's things going on in the news every day that I try to stay on top of. And it's mostly related to the idea that, in some states, non-lawyer run law firms is a thing. So LegalZoom is going to be bringing out a huge team of lawyers to compete against law firms. And they've got technology on their side. They've got a robust platform. And a lot of the lawyers who are running the good old boy style of running a law firm, which is not running it like a business. They're lacking technology. They're lacking culture. They're lacking infrastructure. Unless they're looking to retire in the next 5 years and just kind of move on, they're going to find themselves in a bit of a pickle between competition that's going to be flooding into the market, technology that continues to advance, and the competition that exists right now, and the sharpening of pencils by general counsels and CEOs who want the best legal representation, and they don't necessarily want to pay the most money for it. And so I think that we've got to start really getting serious about the technology, the infrastructure, the culture, and the business development marketing, the stuff that you and I do every day, Adam, because that's really the future of law. And the people that are behind on it now and that aren't seeing the future, they're going to be left behind. You're either in the conversation or you're out of the conversation. And unfortunately, legal has been always very slow to change and adapt. And that's going to end up hurting some people in the next 3 to 5 years pretty seriously.
Yeah, well, we're in Arizona, and the non-attorney law firm thing kicked off earlier this year. And it's really interesting that you bring up LegalZoom hiring attorneys. And, I do wonder how that's going to evolve. All of these platforms that are lead generators for attorneys, how does that market shift as the landscape of owning a law firm changes, And I didn't realize that Utah was going that way. Is that what you said? That Utah's
yeah.
doing the same thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So that will be really interesting to see how that changes.
So now, Adam, you've got a second business. You get called by a lawyer. He wants to partner with you. You could generate X number of leads in a week or a month or whatever. And now you're a partner in a firm that's driving huge revenues. And guess what? You're an equity partner in that firm. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of marketing people are figuring out, hey, I can make a ton of money. I'm making money doing this for other people. But if I did this for myself with a law firm, Scott, I mean, I could be hired by a law firm or work or get equity as a law. I'm not a lawyer, but you want to compete against me for business and business development. I consider myself to be a pretty sharp guy, pretty good at doing business, right? So I think that we need to, and people in Illinois, I'm here in Chicago. Oh, that would never happen in Illinois. Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see about that.
Yeah.
who knows? Things are evolving. Things are evolving all the time.
All right, Steve. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. Where do people find you? And you also host the podcast Be That Lawyer. So you can find you there, but where's your website and the best place to get in contact with you?
Yeah. Website is fretzin.com. It's FRETZIN.com. You can type my name into Google to Steve Fretzin. And then LinkedIn is also a great way. I've got a big following on LinkedIn and constantly posting content and trying to be valuable. There are lawyers out there that are looking for help with business development. I'm happy to have that conversation. And for those who have no interest in that at all, leverage my content. I've got 3 books, now 4 coming out. I've got videos on my YouTube channel and on my website. I've got articles. I've been writing for the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin for 6 years. So if you never want to talk to a coach, that's fine. Use my content and try to get smarter, better, faster as it relates to how you build your book and stay relevant. And that's how I try to be valuable to the industry.
Perfect. All right. Thank you again, Steve, for joining us. And to everyone else, we'll see you in the next episode.